Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 5th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to just email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our partner, our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website, and also support our sheriffs by purchasing a book, A Government by Consent, for them. So that's a campaign for constitutional sheriffs we have going. You can click on the banner. We should have one on the front page, I think, dead center, just a little down, way down. But also there's a banner on the right side on every page of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off. We're in the book of Romans. And we're going to be looking at chapter 12. And let me open that up. Okay, chapter 12, being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teacheth on teaching, or he that exhorteth on exhortation. He that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. He that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good.
Well, amen. Okay, tonight we're going to go pretty quickly into a Q&A. Last week we spent time talking about a few things, which I just want to touch on that in a few minutes. I think the first thing I want to do is try to catch up on some questions that may have come in through email. Jan, do we have any questions that have come in through email that we should have been addressed?
We do have one that has three parts to it.
Okay. Part one.
They're all about a traffic ticket. Okay?
Okay.
And this was discussed, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago. And it says, I see that you uploaded the new traffic ticket verified show cause document. Thank you so much for doing this. I noticed on the document on pages 5 through 9 that the laws pertain to the New York State Constitution. I'm sure I'm going to have to change this section to California constitutional law, right? By any chance, can you point me in the direction regarding where I can locate this information for the state of California so I can edit and change the document for my state?
Yeah, that would have to be Googled. If it's absolute, it depends on what we're doing. I mean, it is, traffic law, and so you probably should try to discover whatever it is in your state. Generally speaking, if you were coming in to court and constitution, for instance, you can apply a constitution in New York to any state of the union, just like you could do the same in any state of the union in any other state. So the same thing, federal law applies everywhere. State laws, to some degree, again, that only applies really to any written law, which is equity, really applies only to commercial activities and, of course, to government agencies or government agents. Again, if that's being applied and if it's being applied appropriately, one state could apply into the other state. So that is applicable. But as far as traffic is concerned, you will find that law that they have or whatever they used, because it's senseless stuff that they use. It doesn't really apply to you to begin with, number one, and it's often it's senseless anyway. If they can't figure out specifically what they can hit you with because there's anything specifically in the law, their traffic law, they got some phrases in there that seem to be generic to apply to you anyway, and when you look at it, it doesn't even make sense. And that's what they did to me in my ticket, which I think was the one that I used to portray the information on that page. And that is found under Education Starts Here, coming down to Law, and then coming to Court Forms and Process. And that's where that page is found for anyone that's interested. If anyone wants to go into the court, and especially if you have questions here, and you want to get information and, some help, it really is important that you understand how the court system works. And for that reason, I wrote the book, Court Access and the Common Law. And you find that on the right-hand side of our website right here. If you click on that, you'll be able to go see information on the book. And then there's plenty of links in there to take you over to Amazon to buy the book. It's a hardcover book, 8.5 by 11, and it's hardcover. And it's only $39.95, so... law books of this type and especially of this caliber, written with the maximum pages possible for that particular book in hardcover with really high quality paper, they're selling, a lot of these types of books for almost $100 and many times over $100, $150, $180, only because there's only a small market for it. So they really pump the price up high. But I take it from a different perspective. I tried to make it as cheap as possible, and that's why it's $39.95. And that offers the opportunity for people who have some interest to get it for a reasonable price and be able. It's affordable, and so I'm looking at hopefully for volume, in order to make money to support not only myself but of course what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. So, but anyway, it's important to read the book. We have a chapter on traffic tickets. We have the anatomy of a court case, which you would follow in any court, which lays out the paperwork and how it gets filled out, the different arguments, the procedures, the mindset. And all of this is important if you're going to go into a court, even into a court fighting traffic tickets, which is the best place to really learn and get some experience. Because the worst case scenario in that court is you're going to lose and they're going to put a fine on you. But there's always a way to win even with that. but you have to learn. So I would suggest anybody buying that book to just read the book like a book from beginning to end, and then come back and make use of it as a reference book at that point, because reading from one end to the other end gives you a broad understanding, gives you the boundaries, you get a good understanding, a mindset, lots of things. And so you get a little familiar with it, so that when you go back for referencing, you know, because you got to write papers and you go to the anatomy of a court case, okay, how do I write a paper? You have to have a summons. And, you know, we go through all of the different paperwork that's applied in opening a court case or replying to a court case. And so now you'll be able to use it as a reference, and you'll find that after you've read the book, it is a lot of new stuff to many people, but it's so powerful. I know for me, as I was learning these things, I became familiar with it very quickly, because it's perfectly logical to begin with. It's powerful. It's empowering. Law is very powerful. Law gives us our heritage. It gives us our unalienable rights. It lays down the gambit. So that's what I suggest to anyone that's coming here for any kind of reference. Get the book, get familiar, and then you ask your questions, the things you don't understand, like we talked about just with the first question, and take it from there, you know. But you have to have knowledge. Knowledge is power. What's the second part of that question?
The second part is regarding whether he is going to need to send a certified mail copy to the county DA and file this in the court where I am to report to the court cited on the citation. If so, is there a certain document that I need in order to motion the court to file this document? And will I still need to appear on the court date that is stated on the ticket?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like any other case, you have to file with all of the parties involved to get a copy to the court. I don't even trust the court, so I even file them with undercertified. I don't just file my papers, I certify everything, because I don't want to hear that they didn't get it. That's number one. In the book, it covers the traffic ticket, and it also covers, I believe, that information of the process and how to put it together. So it's important, again, to see that. The idea is responding to the ticket, and you must serve a copy on to the quote-unquote prosecutor. If you don't know who the prosecutor is, just call the clerk. You know, call the town court. You'll talk to the clerk and ask the clerk who's the prosecutor for the court. And they'll give you the person's name and their address, because that's what you're asking for. It's none of their business why you're asking. Be nice anyway if they try to, you know, ask you those kind of questions. But, you know, in any event, it really isn't any of their business. They shouldn't be asking you any questions. That's an intimidation, in my opinion. So in any event, you get that information. Then you serve that person. You could do it by mail. You get an affidavit of service that someone else that's not involved in the case, you fill it out and prepare it for them. You just have to take them to get it notarized, and they have to drop it into the mail. They have to look at it and drop it into the mail. And on the affidavit of service, it details the paperwork that's inside the envelope that they took it, they deposited it in the mail, and they sent it both certified and regular mail. Usually you want to send it both ways. Drop it as a regular letter, uncertified, and then drop another one, very same thing, in another envelope, certified. Now, the same thing with the court. You file it with the court clerk, and they're probably going to ignore it. They may even send it back, and the judge also might never get it, even if they do have it. And that's called concealment, and that's a violation of law. It's a criminal act, penalty up to 2 years in jail. 10 years in jail for the judge if the judge influences that individual and pressures that individual to send it back or to hide it or to bury it or to destroy it or whatever the case may be. So it's pretty powerful statutes that apply to them. Remember, statutes apply to them and not to us, just to them. So you can use that, and I wouldn't press the issue for criminal acts against them, but you can let the court know it's a criminal act and it's punishable by time in jail. That should shake them up a little bit and get their attention as you're taking them through the process of the court. But you got to do your homework, and you got to be able to respond to them. And that's why reading the book is so important, to get a good picture of that. So, yes, you must serve everybody. And remember, when they don't respond and the judge tries to make the decision, because the paperwork is challenging the jurisdiction, they may have subject matter jurisdiction, but they clearly do not have personam jurisdiction, jurisdiction over the person. And that's the case. That's the point you're making. And therefore, they have to shut this case down. And before they can go forward, the jurisdiction must be decided. Okay, so you'll find that a judge may try to make the decision right there and then and say, well, I'm deciding right now, I got jurisdiction. Well, by what authority and by what in this case are you making that decision on? A judge can only make a decision on what's before him in the case. He can't take anything that he comes out of his mind, okay? If the other side didn't respond with an affidavit to rebut your affidavit, then they acquiesced, they defaulted, and the case must be dismissed. There's nowhere to go with that. That's it. And the judge can do nothing but dismiss. So you push the judge back for a summary judgment for a dismissal because there is no jurisdiction. It hasn't been proven. Until you can prove it, and clearly just saying the words doesn't prove it. So again, you know, you have to have this knowledge. You have to respond in that fashion and see where you go from there. I don't get too much of an argument after that. The bottom line, either they're going to obey the law, or you're going to serve them with what's called a quo vanto, which I know we talked about that recently, but in any event, the quo vanto is an important paper, which is a requirement for them to give you their oath, their bond, and their financials. And they have 10 days to do that, and if they don't, on the 11th day, they forfeit their office, and they must be removed from office. And there is a way that you can enforce that. There is a law that enforces that, so you can use that. They give up their office, and you can remind them of that. Read the paper because you got 10 days to respond, and after that, I'm going to press the law. That's intimidating the judge, and he needs to be intimidated with what? With justice, with the law, because they're breaking the law. They're lawbreakers. But be polite, be careful, and it's always best to try to find a way to signal to the judge these things without directly assaulting them. Again, that takes a little experience and stuff. All right, there's a third part?
Yes, I signed up for the paid jury administrator position, and we'll be going through the training, and I'm super excited. I'd like to know if there are any open jury administrator positions available in San Diego County that you might happen to be aware of.
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty over there. We don't have the specifics. We'll be working on breaking that down shortly. There's four or five individuals that's required in each county. There's four administrators and one paralegal. A paralegal should also be administrator, so there's five. Generally, they're working as a paralegal to do the paperwork and maintain the process, and we'll all be learning that process and learning that paperwork with that paralegal as we go forward, so we can all work and back each other up on each other's jobs. You know, if an individual goes on vacation or is ill for a while or there's a vacancy, and the paralegal is needed to act as an administrator, they should have the ability, so that's why they're an administrator also. But their main job should be the paralegal work. And we all should learn that paralegal work. So again, like we can back each other up. Reread the question again. I want to make sure I've answered it completely.
Okay, he's asking... He's going through the training for the grand jury administrator, right, and he wants to know if there's any positions available in San Diego County.
Yeah, there probably is. Apply for it, and we'll be putting up a page hopefully shortly. It's a matter of getting around to it. We have a lot of work going on, and there's a lot of things happening right now, some amazing things happening, as a matter of fact, which we're going to talk a little bit about tonight. With an announcement that I have to make, a couple of announcements. But in any event, there's probably an opening. And remember, if it is filled, here's the thing. If there's six or seven people chasing that job in the county and there's only four required plus a paralegal, well, the individual that is further along in their education or completed their education is going to be the first choice to get in there. And that's how we're going to look at it. We will certify the individuals. That means to make sure that they have a certain knowledge, and that knowledge is all of the courses from one end to the other, and then an accredited course as an administrator for the grand jury, which is the last course that they must take. And that's the most difficult and probably longest course. And then, of course, we're creating a handbook so people will be able to know and how to operate and do things. And if they have any questions or any problems or need any advice, then it's important for them to connect with us here on a Monday night, and this is where you get your answers to your questions. Also, you can also send your questions in through the email, questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we can respond that way, too, if you don't want to get on the mic or if you want to make sure you get it up front, because we usually answer those questions up front before we take questions here in-house. I guess that's it. No other questions?
Well, John, I keep getting questions about the common law grand juries that we could run through quick if you... First, who calls the grand or petit juries?
Juries are called for by, ultimately, the sheriff. If a prosecutor wants to prosecute a case, he needs to go to the sheriff. If an individual wants to talk to the jury for some reason, and it's, first they'll come to see the administrators, and if it's a criminal act, we will send them to the sheriff so he can bring the case to the sheriff, and the sheriff would then see if he can dig up and make sure he's got enough evidence in order to prosecute the case. Then he would bring the case before the grand jury, and the grand jury ultimately would be called for by the administrators. So when the sheriff comes to them for a jury, then we would call forth the grand jury. The paperwork would go out. We'd use probably their existing secretary to deal with the paperwork and the mailing and the calling forth of the individuals to come in to serve. We'll see how that goes. We probably will have to revamp some of the things that they have in their requirements, because remember, this is the people's court. This is our court. We the people ordained and established the Constitution, so we made the law. We live under God's law. We made the law to control them. We have government by consent. We make that law. We control them. Of course, God controls all mankind, and so we are under God's law, and that's where we stand. And we're not under the law of men. So having the right of government by consent, government by consent is 100% controlling of our courts of law, not the courts of equity. Courts of equity, we've laid out the process, particularly on the federal level. We laid out the details and the powers and authorities they have in Article 1, Section 9 of the 8 of the Constitution. And so that's where their authorities come from. They got 18 powers we've given them, and it gives them the jurisdictions and the authorities to write the law in Congress, and that is applied in the courts by judges. And again, that's dealing with equity, and equity is dealing with administrative things in the sense of working, and it could be lawful things too, dealing with people who are working commercial activities that they have the authorities to write controls for, regulations, statutes, whatever. Same thing that controls the agencies and the agents of those agencies. Again, that's where the application is. But no judge has any business putting their foot into a court of law. That belongs to the people. We got a tribunal there, and the tribunal is we the people, 12 individuals. And those 12 individuals, which we call a petit jury, they decide the facts, they decide the law, they have the power of nullification, and they also decide the penalty or the restitution. With an eye focus mostly on restitution and opposed to a penalty, because restitution in itself is a penalty. And there's enforcement to require that restitution take place. And that's what common law is really all about. It's not to put people in jail and to constantly be punishing people and isolating people. But jail is for people that are violent and really need to be held in a place of correction. And one day I'm going to write a paper concerning jails and problems in the jails and what needs to be done. But anyway, that's what that's for. So we the people decide everything in the courts. Now, we do have a magistrate in the court, and the magistrate, under common law, is like a traffic cop, can't make any real decisions. There are certain decisions that can be applied and pushed forward by the magistrate with an eye on what is right and wrong, you know, running under maxims, the rules of common law, and to make things move along in the court. So that kind of thing, like a traffic cop, is all they can do. The people lost sight of this. They think that they go before a judge and the judge is Almighty God or somebody, that one individual, a political animal no less, is going to make a decision on your life and your property. I mean, that's not law. That's not justice. No, the people decide. Just like when Christ was crucified, what did Pilate say? Let the people decide. So in any event, that's the way the process, and that's what we must take back, that part of the process, controlling the court. Now, so what was the question again, so I can make sure I covered the answer?
Just who calls the grand or petit juries?
Yeah, that would be the administrators. They call it forth. They would bring it to the secretary, who will then put forth through lots, however they work that out, to call people to come in to be chosen for a jury. The judge would usually a magistrate, but a judge is a magistrate also. So a judge can go into a courtroom of law and as a magistrate. He's got to put his magistrate cap on, take off his court, his judge hat, because he can't make a judgment. And so they then swear them in. We make sure they come in with an oath. The judge swears them in, and then the sheriff comes in or the coroner to state the case. Those are the only two individuals that come before the jury to bring a case forward. I would suppose that, of course, the sheriff could bring other individuals in and have witnesses or something, you know, however all that would work. But generally speaking, the sheriff should be laying this out. No prosecutor, no attorney, no bar attorney. Well, bar attorneys we need to get rid of totally, and we're working on that. But no lawyer has the authority or the power to go and talk to the grand jury. That is solely the job of the sheriff and or the coroner. That's it. Now it is true. We could, the grand jury, if they're in session and someone wanted to see the grand jury and it wasn't on a criminal situation, I can't think of a situation where they should be able to just go in and talk to the jury. I mean, what would they be asking for? So I'd have to think about what kind of a case there could possibly be that they want to go talk to a grand jury about. If they're having a problem with a bureaucrat, well, the administrators can deal with that, because to a major degree, the administrators are the investigative body for the grand jury. They're able to give the authority to the grand jury to actually get up, leave the courthouse, and go into agency's office and go through their drawers, look into their computers, ask questions, whatever it is they want if they're investigating something. And they must answer. They cannot remain silent. And you can't lie to the grand jury. So in an investigation by the grand jury, because they feel that there's a law being broken or something somewhere, they have that power and that authority. And it's the administrators which would make the phone call, set up the meetings, and let it be known, tomorrow morning at 8:30 or 9:30, whatever it is, the grand jury is coming in because they got questions and they're doing an investigation. Give them anything they want. And if they refuse to do so, then we'll use the sheriff to enforce it. So there's a lot of power here. This is government by consent we're talking here. And these four individuals plus one, so let's say these five individuals, they must be acting with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. They're there for justice. And they have to be very careful, and we have to police each other. Those five individuals police each other. And if someone is out of order, they need to take the correction from the other four. And if they refuse to, then they can have them removed. By bringing the case down to the committees of safety, to the Judiciary Committee, bring the information to them and request that they be fired. And they could fire that individual, and then another person would come and fill that vacancy. So hopefully that was helpful. But anything else?
Hey, John, I want to make a statement.
Sure.
Just to clear something up, that everything that you just said is the way we're going to operate after we come into power. That is not the way that it necessarily goes right now.
No.
I don't know if that was clear in the beginning.
No, it probably wasn't. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They do not operate in righteousness and justice or with a sense of honor, justice, or mercy.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I remember from Terry Tressel, because they did a lot of research on this, when you want to go see a grand jury, you don't see the grand jury, you see the grand jury foreman. And you give him whatever evidence you think you have. And that grand jury foreman, it's the foreman from one grand jury to the other. They're allowed to meet. Of course, they don't like this because that's how you end up with runaway grand juries, you know? So it's his duty to send it to the right place or send it to his grand jury or whatever. And if it's the wrong grand jury, he's supposed to find out which grand jury it should go to, and then he could take it to the grand jury foreman of that new jury. But that's the process that they always use in the past.
And that would be good in the way the process is working today, but once we get it corrected, then really it would be brought to the administrators, and the administrators would assist them in either getting to the grand jury if they think that they should be talking to the grand jury. If it's a crime being reported, then the sheriff should be called in onto this because they're the law enforcer. They have the experience to look at the evidence and to seek out more evidence. And then he has and if a crime does exist, he has a duty then to bring it to the grand jury. A lot of problems can be dealt with in arbitration with the administrators of the grand jury. You know, when a person comes and makes a complaint to the administrators of the grand jury and say, I'm trying to get information from these people in this office, and they're just stonewalling me. They refuse to give it to me. They want me to wait 6 months and go through the process of paperwork and so on and so forth. Well, we could take care of that because we can get on the phone, talk to the individual, and order them to give this information to them, you know, if there's something in there that needs to be, what's that word, indacted? Redacted. If something in there has to be redacted, then redact it. This guy shouldn't have to wait months and there shouldn't be anything about it. Give them the information. And if they refuse to do so, okay, then the administration can take that to the sitting grand jury, and the sitting grand jury, because they can arbitrate it and command them also. And if not, if they refuse to obey, because now they're refusing to obey the law, then that grand jury can bring an indictment to them and work from that way. You know, so again, we're looking to set the system up and bring it back to an order where the people are in control. We're not political animals. We're not sitting in any office. We're not standing up for a Republican or Democratic Party or any party. We're the people interested only in justice. That's all we're interested in. And to get restitution to anyone who deserves it. And a lot of times the restitution could be applied and worked out and agreed upon through working it out with the administrators with the acknowledgement of a grand jury once they're sitting, if it's necessary. So lots of things. We could be very creative. Remember, you can go back to the Magna Carta, and the Magna Carta put a lot of power in the grand jury, a lot of power. If they're being wronged, then they'll go out and take the castle away and do whatever they got to do until that king or that person does the right thing. So that's the power, and people need to exercise that power, because right now, bar attorneys are exercising that power. Okay.
Next question, then, John.
Oh, there's another question. Okay.
Who creates the list of potential jurors, and how is it derived?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we can get it from, I know they go to the DMV, they'll pull it there, they pull it to people who are registered to vote. I think that's one of the best places to do it because at least these people have made a decision to go out and vote. It's unfortunate that, the Democrats particularly, but I guess the Republicans are just as guilty. You know, people who are going for assistance here or to a government office for something there or anything, they're constantly trying to push you to go out and register to vote. When I was younger, no one pushed me to go out to register to vote. I turned 18 and I became very interested in voting, and I did it on my own initiative, and I had to figure out what I wanted to be. I chose Republican because I understood that long ago that we were a republic. And so But, you know, parties are no good. We're going to address that with the, before the... I don't know whether we're going to address that before the Supreme Court or not yet, but I got to think about that. But parties definitely are a problem. The Bar Association is a problem. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It's repugnant to all of our founding documents. It's repugnant to the common law. So because parties do nothing but divide. They set one end against one side against the other. Washington spent three-quarters of his farewell speech concerning the problems with parties. And so we should, you know, take that advice from Washington. Parties are destructive, and we should have no part of it. It has no place in a republic, none whatsoever. It has, it suits no purpose, none.
So you're saying, John, that is not representative of your peers, then? It's from different groups within your peers.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. Say that again, or reword it?
Well, it's not a true cross-section of your peers, so you're not going to be
blind. Well, yeah, you know, look, again, it's the people within the county, to some degree, I guess they could be pulled off the jury because they may not be a representation of your peers. And that, I guess, would be debated as the jury is being chosen. But there's very little that could be refused, that could refuse an individual in a grand jury. And that might be a hard case to make, but it could be made. The key thing here is this. I think the best place to pull this would be off of the people who are, you know, registered to vote. And besides that, also, you can go to the DMV. I mean, sheriffs have pulled people off the street in times over the years past. And just pulled together a grand jury, especially in 150-100 years ago, you know, things like that might have happened out west particularly. And I'm sure there are other places. I mean, there used to be the phone book. I mean, that could be a possibility too. But I think the two major sources, I think we need to think about that, and people should come up with ideas, and we can talk about it and put something together. But go ahead. Jim.
What about just the residents of the area?
That's an excellent idea. Yes, that's an excellent idea. Well, again, you know, it's within the county is the key, but yeah, it would be very nice to try to get it isolated to a smaller district within there, maybe within the election districts, you know, of that area. I don't know. So it's something that's a thoughtful, you know, let's think on that, and maybe we can talk one day. And I'd like to hear other people's opinions. I haven't really got too strong an opinion on that either way. So.
Okay, so the next question then is, who selects the jurors from that list, and what is the process?
Well, you know, they're picked by chance, really, and they come in and they're called in. And, you know, they get a chance to be, I think it's called, is it called sequestered? I'm not sure what it's called, but they can... I think sequestered is something else.
They what day the jury.
They what?
They what day the jury. And both lawyers do.
Yeah, is that the word? I don't recognize
it. I think it's
that
called what day, but they question the jurors.
Yeah.
Each side either, both of them have to accept the juror or reject it. One of them rejects them.
But there are no lawyers in this process.
I disagree with that. I disagree.
Well, that's the way they do it today.
Yes, that's the way they do it. I want to think it out more before I make some solid thoughts on it. I'll write a paper on my opinion on what thing I think should be done. People need to get involved and think about this and work this out. But here's the problem. You can't just get rid of a jury out of a whim. You have to have a good reason to get rid of a jurist, okay? Right now, they do paperwork, and they're asked questions. What news stations do you watch? Do you watch Fox or CNN, or who do you watch? Do you have guns? Does anybody in your household has a gun? Do they have a license for those guns? I mean, they go on and on and on with these questions. Are you Republican? Are you Democrat? These are serious questions that are being asked that should not be asked. And so, therefore, you get a person, they've come in, and they say, well, these people are gun people, and the lawyer could, I don't want this one or that one. Now, they may have to have a reason today or some kind of a reason, but that should not even come to play. It's none of their business who these people are in that level. The question is really generally, do you know the person? Do you have a bias against this person? Do you hate black people? Are you prejudiced because maybe it's a black person on trial? Are you prejudiced? You know, certain questions of that type. And I have not sat down to think out what might be good questions. So everybody should think about that. And I think we should have a brainstorm one day on that issue. There's quite a few issues we should brainstorm out. And then we can put in a paper and give advice to the, the people. It could be an issue that should go to the Committee of Safety. Matter of fact, all these issues should go to the Committee of Safety. But it may also be an issue being directly to the administrators, for instance, of the juries. But we would give it to both so that everybody knows. We all need to be educated as much as possible. But remember, we have the power to make it up as we go to a large degree. You know, we just have to be just. That's it. That's the key to all law, being just. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a common misconception that in order to be a juror that you cannot know the person. That is false. It's supposed to be a jury of your peers, people you did business with, people that know you, people that could even vouch for you or even say that you're no good. It doesn't matter. That's the whole idea. They're not supposed to be getting people out of a county and a place that
Well, we may have to be careful with that. I think we need to think about that. And
if it's a notorious crime, maybe they don't want it in the
area.
Yeah,
he could be a pal. I want to get him off, you know? I mean,
the other thing is if there's a clear conflict of interest, then he should be dismissed. Like in the Bundy trial, they put a BLM... like investigator on the jury. He had a conflict of interest.
That was a setup.
It was a setup. But you see, if they would have asked the right questions, are you in law enforcement? Do you work? Those are questions that, and then if he lied, then he should have been prosecuted.
And he'd go to jail. Well, look, here's the problem, and I don't want to debate this now because we've got a lot of other things, but it's something we need to debate, think about, talk about, brainstorm, and then come to conclusions. And even if we have to give conclusions of two sides, that's fine. People have to decide for themselves at the county level. But the key thing is this. If you put individuals in there that knows them, okay, they may have a bad taste about that person, or maybe they have a good taste, or maybe they're a good buddy. I got to help this guy. There's all kinds of things that could come to play with that. Peers are one thing, people out of your neighborhood, you know, business people, because maybe you're a business guy or possibly things like that. Okay, fine. But if you have personal business dealings with the person or you have a personal knowledge, then you're coming in already with a bias because you have a personal relationship or a personal knowledge. And it's very difficult for a person to separate that. And for the common person, and I think for most people, not all people, to separate those things when you're dealing with trying to make a judgment and you're bringing things into the issue about that person that's not being brought into the court, because the only thing that could be brought for that you have to make that decisions on is what's brought into the court. There could be nothing from the outside. It's got to be just what was brought into the court. And all of that is worked out over the process of time through paperwork back and forth, and then you have the trial. Sometimes a trial can be done with a summary judgment because it's so obvious. But with a criminal case, of course, that cannot be done. They have to go before a jury. And even if they plead guilty, then the jury still has to hear the case and the admission of guilt, because they get to decide how much mercy, if any, to be given, number one, and to make sure that and they may want to nullify some things in that, or of course, they make the final decision on the restitution, you know, the penalty, with an eye on restitution, because the injured party must be restored. The state is not the injured party. So the state gets everything. They get the money. They put the person in jail. They make more money. It just goes on and on and on. That's not what justice is. Justice is you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four, or whatever the biblical principle is. The maximum, according to the Supreme Court, from my understand, is 10 times the amount. You know, you steal $1,000, you got to give back $10,000. Of course, there's exception to every rule. There's other things involved. You know, if there was violence, all this stuff, you know, has to be considered. So anyway, I don't know that it's a good idea that you have anyone in the jury that knows the person. If they have because they already have an opinion about that person, and that's a dangerous thing.
Well, yeah, it can be, but it's more lightly held. I think they more mean like a jury of peers would be. You wouldn't want a bunch of white collar workers judging a blue collar, or you wouldn't want a bunch of white men judging one black man, because those are not necessarily his peers.
Right, you know, I understand that, of course.
So that's kind of like the general.
Look, this is something that I think we should get together and brainstorm and record and then come up with papers, maybe one paper with one position, and if necessary, two or three positions. I don't know. But we have to figure that out. But in any event, let's move on because we're running out of time here.
Yeah, the next two questions, John, only need one word answers.
Yeah.
The first is who swears in the jurist?
Judge. Next.
You mean magistrate?
Magistrate or the judge, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, there's no judge in this.
Wait, but there is a judge in the court, and if there's a judge there, he's also a magistrate, so he can do it. Wonder. It doesn't have to be the magistrate that's hearing the case. You know, that's acting as traffic cop in the case. It could be whoever's on duty that day.
Okay. Who writes the indictment and who signs the indictment?
The indictment is written by the paralegal. And when the indictment is completely written, then the paralegal needs to take it to the jury to make sure that they have been represented correctly in what was written on that paper and that there was no misunderstanding. So it's fully the jury's decision, and that's it.
Okay, next question. Constitutionally, what is the role of the jury administrator in this process?
Well, the jury administrator is the orientator. They orientate the jurors, prepare them for what's coming up, and call them forward. They have a day to orientate them. We got a nice program that's pretty much already put together, which is really a series of videos and questions and answer and conversation at the end of each video. And then, of course, a handbook that needs to be gone through point by point by point. If they are orientating a grand jury, then we have a grand jury book. And we have to go through that. Everybody gets a copy of that grand jury book, and that is what's looked at and talked about over the course of that day, with some videos in between. If that's the grand jury, then that's one. If it's the trial jury, then it's a petit jury book, and that's the book that's used in order to orientate them, to bring them to understanding their powers and authorities and what it is that's expected of them. And that's it. It's going to be pretty cut and dry, pretty simple, and everything will be laid out in handbooks and also some videos for orientation. And whatever we miss, again, you come back and you bring it to our attention. And if we don't have an answer, we'll search out an answer, and then we'll add it to the necessary things to the handbooks as required.
And that's all the questions, John.
Okay. Well, it took up the whole almost time here. All right, real quick. Last week, we had a good Monday night, and we focused in on the position of the Bible. Let me get to a page. I had it open. I think it's a back one. Yeah, we made a case for the Bible in school. Anybody that hasn't heard that, okay, they should go up here and look at this and listen to last Monday's program. You can skip through if you want and get to the basics, but it's always good to go through the whole thing. But I think it's in the second hour that I really got to, wasn't it the second hour, Gerard, that I got into this? I think it was, yeah, because I closed down.
Yeah.
So it was in the second hour that I brought this forward. And so I made a case for the Bible back in school. And we have to realize a couple of things. You know, we got to get outside of what we've been distorted in our thinking. They've tried everything they can, and they've come very close in wiping Christ out of our minds and our hearts. Maybe not out of our hearts, but out of our government and our life. And you know, people are afraid to say, you know, Merry Christmas or anything. You know, it's just they've really. And I saw it from the beginning. You know, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, and I saw it happening. You know, I was young. I really didn't understand a lot to a lot degree, but I look back and I understand now what they were doing. But the Bible was in the school up until 1963, and it was a book to teach morals and history and who the king of the court is. That's the key point of this whole thing. Not getting into prophecies, not getting into denominational thinking, not getting into churchy things. No. This is to be a historical book. that teaches morals and who the king is. And that's the king. And the king is, of course, the God through Emmanuel, God being with us, Jesus Christ. So you have a picture particularly of the four Gospels particularly. But then, of course, you have an explanation and expounding on these things through the epistles after that. And also one of the really great book is the book of Proverbs. As a matter of fact, is it Proverbs? Yeah, Proverbs. Matter of fact, after we read Romans, I think we're going into Proverbs because I've just been recently listening to it. You know, I listened to it on audio, and exploring some of the things in there. And it's pretty powerful. It lays out the Lord, lays out morality, and it gives people a good framework on how they should be living life. And how a godly individual is, so that's a really good book to we're going to look at or have read to really after we finish Romans. All right. Anyway, people should go take a look at that. You can find this these in video form. As everyone I think knows, if you go up to our weekly call page right here, and you can get all of the audios. Okay, all of the audios are down here. It goes back for years, so we got a lot of audios here. But some of our Monday night programs, we do it the video. And so I kind of pick and choose certain ones that I think a good lesson was taught, and I put it up there. And that could be found on underneath today. Let's see, today's issue? No. Yeah, today's issues, NLA Monday Open Forum videos. That's it there. And, you know, and there's others in here if you haven't seen A Need for a Proper Education, if you haven't seen that one. This was the subjects of a Monday night meeting. Sovereign Citizen Movement, we talked about. The NLA Monday Night Open Forum, Quo Vadis, very important to look into that, and Oaths and Bonds. Powerful, powerful stuff. Again, Oaths and Bonds, a classical education. You know, the Bible is part of a classical education. That's the centerpiece of education, as a matter of fact. And that's the other thing, science. Science has also discarded God out of their whole system. It used to not be like that. Science and religion was very closely related because a lot of the people believed in that, and they believed in the Bible, and they used the Bible as a historical thing and to give us understanding and knowledge in science. There's a lot in the Bible that can help us with science as much as it can help us with history, too. And it could be related out to the history that men have wrote and in the timelines and everything. But that's kind of deep study. That wouldn't be studied in school particularly. Convention of States, we spoke about the original tent of our Constitution. That was powerful. Jefferson, extremely powerful. Stop Calling Us a Democracy. Interviewing Candidates. We the People Are Sovereign. ABA, the American Bar Association, must be banned for treason. NLA, Political Parties Are Your Worst Enemy, and that was just an open forum. We got up there a couple of open forums. I guess we didn't have subject matters then, but we must have picked some subject matter, and we just didn't list it. Okay, anyway, next week, I just want to make this announcement, two announcements. Tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room, we've been asked by the Pennsylvania Allegheny County Committee of Safety to address their committee in a Q&A. And I told them I would do that, so I'm going to be coming into their room to talk with them through our room right here. They'll have us up on a screen. And it'll be a Q&A starting at 7:30, and it's going to run till 9 o'clock. So 7:30 to 9 o'clock. Now, we're going to remain later than that because if people have questions here in the room, we'll pick up a Q&A here. And we'll stay here as long as we can, but I will not stay any longer than 11 o'clock. So we end there at 9, and we can go an extra half hour, an hour, and even for some hardcore people, maybe 2 hours, I don't know. But we'll see how it goes. So the whole focus of that Q&A is going to be all questions on committees of safety and what we're doing and the different, you know, the different kinds of subcommittees and, you know, the administrators and everything focused in on that. So it'll be very powerful. It will be recorded. It'll be recorded in video form. It will be uploaded on this page right here under, again, let me say, today's issues, NLA Monday Open Forums. Now, the other thing is next Monday, I believe I'm going to have the paperwork done. We're still collecting information, compiling statistical things with our court cases that we've brought into our case, and we're using it as evidence. And we're writing a paper. It'll be done. I'm convinced it'll be done before next Monday, because we're very close to being done right now. And so we're going to read that paper, and it's going to be a very powerful paper. And I'm going to call it. We're going to spend the entire Monday program on this paper and have a conversation about it. And we'll be pulled together as a grand jury. And at the end of this thing, we're going to take a vote on bringing this paper before the United States Supreme Court. Now, we're going to have access on a couple of unique ways, and we're also going to have enforcement. Now, I'm not going to talk much about enforcement right now. Gerard shared a video with me, and in there was enforcement. I didn't get it the first time I listened to it. And then I went back, and I was just listening to it again because I was working, and I was listening to it again as I was working. And then I picked up on something the guy said, and we found enforcement. We found a way. We can get before the United States Supreme Court. They do not have a choice but to hear our case, and you'll see how we couch this and put this paperwork together for that purpose. There's no escape for them, number one. And the other thing is we have enforcement, powerful, powerful enforcement. That's what we discovered. I'm going to leave that to Gerard because he's the one that found it, and we're moving into his hour now anyway. And he understands it more than I have. I went back and started listening to more details without working. Just sitting down and listening to these people talk, and then I was picking up a lot of stuff. I should have done that the first time. And unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time to really just sit down and listen or listen to a conversation or watch a video because I'm busy with many, many other things. But important ones I do, and this was important, and I'm glad I went back for a second and even a third time on this video. But in any event, we got that enforcement. We've got a way to get before the United States Supreme Court. And I believe we have the most powerful paper that we've ever written. I truly believe that. You people can be the judge of that. And at the end of the day, when we finish, we'll do a Q&A, and we'll discuss things. And before we close down, it'll be a grand jury vote. So whoever's coming in will be part of the grand jury. You'll be anonymous. No names or anything is connected to this. But I would like to say one thing. I was listening to Peterson today when he was doing a thing. I'm trying to think of the guy. I don't remember the guy's name he was talking to. And it was brought up the idea that, doing the right thing and what we need to do. And the response of some people is, I may get in trouble if I do the right thing. I may get in trouble. I may have a problem if I stand up. And he answered that really good. And he came back, you're going to get in trouble if you don't. And you're going to get into bigger trouble if you don't, ultimately. Not only do you have to answer to God, but that's the biggest problem. But the bottom line here is if we don't step up and stand up and do what we have to do, we're going to be lost people. We're going to be in concentration. They're going to get rid of us. That's what they want to do. They want to get rid of us. You get in more trouble by not stepping up to do the right thing and say the right thing when it has to be said. It's less trouble, ultimately, by just doing the right thing. So anyway, I thought that was pretty powerful. It was a good answer, and it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. So it's time for people to stand. But let me just say again, next Monday when we come together, it's not going to be a normal Monday night program. It's going to be focused in on this paper, a discussion or questions and answers on this paper, and then a decision by everyone involved whether this paper goes forward to the United States Supreme Court or not. You will be acting as a jurist in this thing. So, and again, no names. Everybody is anonymous, just like any jurist should be. So that's that. So I hope everybody shows up, and I hope, again, we're going to be talking to a lot of new people tomorrow night, so hopefully a lot of those people will show up, and they'll see a lot of what we're doing, the power of what we're doing, the authority of what we're doing, and so much more. So with that, I ran out of my time. I'm sorry, no open forum from me at this point, but I'm sure Gerard maybe will have an open forum, and I'll be here close to the end anyway. So, Gerard, are you ready to take? You go ahead.
Can you repeat the date and time for the COS meeting?
Okay, the Committee of Safety meeting by Allegheny, Pennsylvania, Committee of Safety, and they're bringing a lot of people together. And I'm inviting a lot of different people that I've been meeting over the past week, so they'll probably be coming into the room. That's for tomorrow night, Tuesday. As soon as this program's over tonight, I'm going to send out an email. So it's tomorrow night, Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You should come in at 7:15. We're going to do a timestamp and a little thing to bring us and ready for the 7:30 opening, which then we'll be talking with the people in Allegheny County. We'll be doing a Q&A. And then again, we're going to open that up to the entire room by 9:30.
And that's in this room?
That's in this room, right here at National Liberty Alliance. Now, the same thing next Monday. Next Monday is going to be a grand jury collection. Okay, we're coming together as a grand jury, or as a jury. Let's put it as jurors, because we'll be combination of grand and petit, and you'll see what I mean when we go through this, because it is a combination of jury and petit. It is that powerful, and we're going to go through the authorities and everything on this, and that probably is going to take an hour to lay out, maybe less, because the paper is surprisingly short. Lots of memorandum attachments, and there's no way we can go through the memorandums, but we will give you location of those memorandums, we'll post those memorandums, and you'll be able to go read those memorandums on your own, and you can come back with questions on that too, or corrections if you want to offer any. But that probably will take 40 minutes or so to go through, and then we're going to go right into a Q&A. We're going to bypass everything except the Bible reading, and we're not going to take any Q&As beforehand by email until the following week, and we'll take it from there. But again, this is what we've been working for. This is what we put 14 years of labor, of building this website, of writing these papers, of creating all of these education for the purpose of finally and taking on all of the different cases we've taken on, habeas corpuses. We have in our paperwork, and we're going to bring them before the United States Supreme Court for a demand for the indictments that we've indicted people for to be issued out and executed. And we've indicted hundreds of judges. We've got the non-judicial foreclosures, and we've got a few other different kinds of cases, but it's mostly not people who've lost their homes. We're looking for restitution for all those people, people who have ended up in jail and lost their children and spent time in jail, and the habeas corpuses that were ignored. We're looking for restitution for all those people, and those people should be here that we pull these cases in, you know. I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, I'll be as polite as I can. Like, people have come in here and asked for help, and we have helped them and put a tremendous amount of work into help, and we're taking it now to the end, and yet they don't come to the Monday night meeting. You know, I'm sure some of them do, but, again, when I look at the numbers, there's nowhere near the people we have helped. So, in any event, you know, they have the opportunity to come now and sit in on this and work with us and start to get educated and get involved on the county level, building committees of safety, and doing what we, the people, must do in order to have government by consent, in order to secure our liberties, to understand our heritage, to exercise the powers that we have. We must step up to take care of business, and that requires education. I guess that's it. I don't think I have anything else, so we're going to move over to Gerard. How long do you think you're going to be? Are you going to be able to move over to Q&A shortly? Gerard? You're muted if you're talking. Hello, Gerard?
I was muted.
Oh, okay. How long before you...
I don't really know. I mean, it's already.
All right, well, do what you got to do and try to get to some Q&A, because I know people must have questions, and I apologize.
It's not even open. There's nobody in the queue.
Well, we haven't opened it.
There you go.
So, I mean, I'll open it if you want, and we'll see what we can do.
You can, you can open it.
Okay,
I got a question.
Open Q&A mode.
So, do you remember?
Hold on 1 minute. I just want to make the note. I was thinking of going to hands, but people coming on our phones, I don't know if they can raise their hands. But right now, we'll talk about that later. We're just going to do regular Q&A. Q&A is a star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And if you got an app, there should be a place you can raise your hand. And Gerard, you got it from here. I'm going to let go of the controls.
And I got a question for you, gentlemen.
Yeah?
Do you remember what Estienon number that was where he revealed that military was talking to the Supreme Court? Was that the last one?
Yeah, 28? You know what? I just re-listened to that today, too.
I think Ollie might have
yeah,
it.
I think
it's on Video Sanctuary. Wasn't it? It was at the 30-minute mark because
I think that the other conversation was at the 30-minute mark when he was talking about what you put me forward to, and he was talking about enforcement that they have.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Okay, that's about the 30-minute mark or 32-minute mark, somewhere around there.
That's where he revealed
it. That's not on SG Anon.
Oh, it's not.
No. No, it's on...
Oh, that was the interview with Nino?
There was those guys that took their case to the court. But SG Anon talks about the two. I don't know where it is on that.
Yeah, I think Ollie has it. I think it's even on Video Sanctuary. But anyway, it's not that important. I'll just announce it.
People can
look for it themselves.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of videos on Video Sanctuary .com, and everybody should be going over there and looking at them. Ollie's put tons and tons of videos. And they're all videos that are making history. That if you go looking for them on Google, you're not going to find them because they've already got them shadow banned and everything else. And that's the whole reason we made that site and called it Video Sanctuary, because it's a sanctuary for those videos that bring out real news that the news is not talking about. And that's going on. It's worse now than it's ever been. Stuff going on and them not making a peep about it. And for one thing is this whole Brunson case. That should be all over the place. It's like the best kept secret. And let me see.
Right, do you want the desktop?
Yeah, I'm going to probably want to play some of this.
I'm getting off. You should open it up now, then I'll stop mine. So I just stopped sharing. And you should take over the desktop. Right, if you can get to Q&A, fine. If not, we'll just apologize for that. Again, we need people, reacting to the things we're saying, responding, asking questions, maybe even offering correction from time to time. You know, we need correction. And we've had correction over the years, and we've made the changes accordingly when we discover we went up a wrong trail, you know?
Right. Okay, thank you. This is something that just broke tonight, and I've heard rumors of this in the past, but it's out again, and it seems to be out much stronger than it did in the past. So I think it's probably pretty good. I mean, best news, they'll put stuff out there. Sometimes it's definitely proven. A lot of times it's not, but this has to do with the Supreme Court ruling that the COVID pathogen is not a vaccine. It's unsafe and must be avoided at all costs. This is the beginning of the takedown, I think, that they're doing. The arrest, because most of the arrests that are going to happen is because they tried to commit genocide on us with that shot, like it or not. And it says here, Big Pharma and Anthony Fauci have lost a lawsuit filed by Robert Kennedy Jr. and a group of scientists, and that's true. And this is only 5 minutes long. I didn't plan on doing this tonight, but I think that this is going to be, you're going to hear, this is going to be up and coming, and you're going to have heard it here first. I mean, there's a lot of good writing in here. Some of this stuff was said 2 years ago. They're bringing it out now like it's new, but the CEO and head scientist of Pfizer had said, like here where it says, billions of people have already been sentenced to certain inevitable and painful death. Anyone who receives the injection will die prematurely, and 3 years is a generous estimate of how long they can survive. What was his name? The head CEO of Pfizer. I am having a senior moment. He said that. Now, there's some scientists out there that are claiming that they can reverse it, and they can do it through frequencies and different things like that.
Espionon said they do have the technology to reverse it.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Espionon said that they do have the technology to reverse it, and they will be executing it when they take over.
Yeah, they're talking about the 5G and tuning it to do it. So we'll see how that works. I don't know. But anyway,
well, there may be other things also, because I don't know. He did talk about that, but it sounded like there was more to it than that.
There is a lot more to it. There's a protocol that you can take, and I don't want to get into it, but there is certain medicines you can take. And the main thing is that the sooner you do it, the better, because if you wait too late, then you have to take them the rest of your life. And they're mostly natural vitamins and things like that. You know, it's nothing crazy. But you got to keep your immune system up, because that shot, you know, by the third booster, you're an AIDS patient, essentially. So that's the deal. Okay, anyway, this is about that. I'm going to play this. This is only a minute and 57. This is not what I originally wanted, but I think this is going to be very big in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, don't forget to cover our enforcement, if you can.
Yeah, I want to get to that. Yeah. Anyway, let me just play this real quick. I haven't even seen this yet. But it's only... this isn't the one I wanted. I'm sorry. Are you hearing that?
Did you click the button for your sound? If not, go back and click the button.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe I didn't do that. Hang on.
You go back to share, and you should be able to get in there just corrected. Click that button.
I got to get back on this. Share. Let me just stop sharing. I'll go in and share. Oh, you know what, John?
What?
I don't think they're going to let me do it.
Because you're coming in on a different way?
Because I'm on the web browser, and I don't see that option.
All right, well, why don't you talk about it so the people are informed on what we're talking about? And again, you know, the enforcement. Make sure you cover that, and then go to maybe Q&A if you can't get anything else going.
I didn't try this out before I did it, so I didn't know that I knew this wasn't a full version, but I didn't realize what wasn't full about it. But anyway, this is Robert F. Kennedy. You know, he's done a lot of work, and he's been screaming against the vaccines, and he brought on a whole team of experts, scientists, doctors, and he put a case in the Supreme Court, and it's very silent now because...
Drop the link in my Skype. I'll play it for you.
Yeah, this.
Wait a second, I gotta
stop. Right here, it's this one. Yeah, you can play it. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, drop it in my Skype so I can click onto it and get to it. I got computer sound checked, NLA, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I gotta work on this thing.
Okay, start sharing. I'm ready whenever you are.
They really didn't fix me up here with this thing. Oh, you can use the what do you call it? You could use the browser. Yeah, but you can't host with the browser, apparently. Is
that it, Bombshell?
Yep.
Okay, let us go onward. If you don't hear it, let me know. But this is it here. It'll go down.
Go down, right there,
Bob
that
Kennedy.
One.
Right. Yep.
What he has done is he's taken that agency which Congress created to find the source of infectious diseases, of allergic diseases, of neurological diseases, of autoimmune diseases, and he's cut off all the money for doing his job, which is to find those and eliminate the sources. And instead, he's turned that agency into an incubator for pharmaceutical products. So he has a $6.1 billion annual budget from us, the taxpayer. He gets another $1.6 billion from the military, and that's why, by the way, he has to do gain of function. He has to do weapons technology, because otherwise he'd lose all that military money. So he gives out 13 times what Bill Gates gives out every year. He's the most powerful person in public health in history. NIH has 300,000 researchers around the world that are funded by this huge flow of money that's coming basically from or determined by Tony Fauci. And what he does is he develops vaccines and drugs in his lab. He farms them out to university scientists who are called PIs. These are the virologists, the vaccinologists, the most powerful people. These are the guys who you see on CNN every night. The doctors like Art Kaplan, Peter Hotez, and Paul Offit, who present themselves as independent scientists, but they're all on Tony Fauci's payroll. All the people who sit on those boards, you know, the FDA board, which is called VRBPAC, and the CDC board, ACIP, that approves new drugs, they're all taking money from Tony Fauci. They are all completely dependent on him. He has the power to make careers, to ruin any scientist on the earth who does science that he doesn't like. Because he's giving, what he does is he takes these drugs, he creates new drugs in his lab, he farms them out to the university scientists who are the most powerful people in those universities, the deans, the chairman of the department. They do the clinical trials. So like the phase one trial, they'll have 100 people. Fauci pays $20,000 per patient to that scientist. The university skims off half. So now the university is involved in supporting Fauci. Then you go to phase two and he's got 10,000 people. And he's giving these hundreds of millions of dollars to each of these universities, to Baylor, to Harvard, to Columbia, to Berkeley. And you have these very, very outstanding scientists who everybody respects. But they are not independent. He owns them all. And that's how he controls these global narratives. Listen, every virologist in the world, every single one, without one exception, knew that coronavirus was lab-generated for a year. Anybody,
hey, John, how long is this?
Protein sequence knew that. Why did the Omerta hold for a full year? Why didn't nobody speak up of those tens of thousands of virologists around
five minutes.
Here's why.
Yeah, I'm just not talking about what I thought it was. I wanted to hear about how the Supreme Court ruled on this, and we don't hear about it.
Computers are totally destroyed.
We don't have to listen to this. It's not what I thought it was. Like, Fauci has to be hung. That's the long and the short of it. He's made billions of dollars on people suffering and death. He's the one that took remdesivir, which is a drug that he helped develop, that the FDA refused to approve because it had a 53% death rate. I mean, that's disgusting. 53%, that means more than half the people they give it to die, but it shuts the organs down. That's what they killed my sister with. She went in and said, no remdesivir, and they gave it to her anyway. That was murder, pure and simple. And that's exactly, so he couldn't make any money with it. So when they got the emergency use authorization, he put in protocols. You can only use this, this, and that. And he made remdesivir one of the only remedies, the only medicines that they could use for COVID so that he could make his money on the research that he did. That's why he did it. And it was $5,000 a shot. Do we need to know any more about Fauci? I don't think so. Anyway, I don't know if I can play this next one. I'm on my other computer, so let me try it. This is the one that I want to get into the enforcement. And as far as this Brunson case, have we ever even explained the Brunson case on NLA? I don't think we have.
No.
I don't know that anybody's.
I don't think you want to get too deep into it, except there, you know, basically what it's about, and then people will listen to it. But the enforcement that they covered, if you know where that is, I know it's at about Mark 30, if I remember correctly.
What was that in this one here? It was in
the one that I'm showing right now. Do you want me to try to find it?
Well, I want them to hear Brunson first. I want them to hear his opinion, which I think he talks first in the beginning. So run this Brunson guy first. Bump it up to, like, I don't know.
You're talking about the one I've got showing right now?
Yes, this guy up in the left corner. Nino starts with him. That's one of the brothers, the Brunson brothers, that filed this case in court.
Okay, so where do you want me to start it at?
Right in the beginning. Just let it start where it's at. You might want to push it ahead a little bit.
And I apologize to my audience. I have dropped the...
They put some pressure on the legal-minded brother who's behind the legal procedures and everything. Said, so you've got to find some rule.
Is this it? That's good?
Yeah.
Some civil procedure that we could bypass the 10th Circuit Court decision because they're not doing anything. So he did some research, and he called me, and he was excited. He says, the Supreme Court has Rule 11 that allows you to bypass the final 10th Circuit Court or a circuit court without their decision, but it has to be deemed a national emergency. So he says, what we have to do is when we file this petition, it's got to actually say on the cover, petition for the United States Supreme Court, petition for writ of certiorari under this court's Rule 11. So we put it all together, and the Supreme Court requires especially bound, and you have to go through some pretty good formatting to get it to them correctly. So we had it perfect bound, and we sent it off to them, and just with our fingers crossed and prayers that they would accept this as a national emergency and let us bypass the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals decision since they were sitting on it. So 5 days later, my brother, the plaintiff, received a phone call from the clerk's office. Now, the clerk of the Supreme Court is not just a justice clerk. The clerk of the Supreme Court is, I believe his name is Scott Sessions Harris. And for 11 years, he was the attorney for the Supreme Court. And so a case analyst from his office calls my brother and told him that they had decided to accept this case based on the Rule 11 petition platform, which means they were accepting it without us going to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals because they obviously characterize this as a national emergency. And so they also requested that he put additional pleadings in it that they had been seen in the docket from the lower federal court. And so they said, put that in there and then get it to us as soon as you can. And so we put that all together. And 2 days before we were ready to get it off to them, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, we were notified, had made a decision. And so it's like, well, now we don't need the Rule 11. So we thought, well, should we just leave that information in there or take it out? So he called the Supreme Court, the number that they gave him, and talked to the case analyst. And she says, now that they've done that, you don't need the Rule 11 part of it. Just take that out, take it off the cover, and put the stuff in we asked, and then get it to us as soon as you can. They said, how soon could you get it to us? And we said, my brother said, about 2 weeks. And they said, well, can you try to get it to us sooner than that? So a week later, they had received it. So what happened is we got it to them. We mailed it on the 20th of October. They received it the 21st, and they docketed it on the 24th, and they showed that it was filed on the 20th, the day we sent it. That's standard procedure. And then they notified the U.S. attorneys who were defending the 380 defendants that they had until the 23rd of November to respond with an opposition. That was their deadline. They get one chance. They can file an opposition to this petition. That's it. As soon as they file that, it goes to conference where the 9 justices hear this in a private room, and they take a vote on it, whether it moves forward to a full-blown hearing with the litigants, both parties represented, go ahead and argue before the justices or not. So we send it off to them, and they accept it, and then they notify the attorneys that they've got till the 23rd. So the 23rd rolls around. That was the day before Thanksgiving. That was Wednesday. So Wednesday, we're thinking their deadline is up. Why hasn't anything happened? What's going on? The U.S. attorney's dropping the ball. What's going on? They're going to miss their opportunity to oppose this, and that would be fine with us, miss the deadline. So all of a sudden, like early afternoon, we see on the docket that the U.S. attorneys are no longer representing the 380 defendants. They have been relieved of their duties, and now the United States Solicitor General is representing, as their legal counsel, the 388 defendants on the complaint.
So it's like everything's aligning. Everything's aligning just perfectly.
Yes, exactly. We were blown away. See, she could have asked for an extension. That would have put it off. But she didn't ask for an extension, and she didn't file an opposition to it. So she waived the rights of all 388 defendants to oppose this petition. So now the justices go into conference by themselves, no one else in there, and they review the information and the petition, and they show that the Solicitor General has waived their right to oppose it, to file an opposition, and then they talk about it, and they basically take a vote. Nine of the justices take a vote. If four of the justices vote in favor of it moving forward to a full-blown hearing, it moves to a hearing. If not, then
so I was just going to ask you, what other roadblocks could what other roadblocks do you foresee coming up? What kind of interference can they play here?
Well, all the interference is done. The interference could have been the motion, the opposition, the filing of the opposition, which they waived the right to do. We're blown away with that. We can't believe that happened. So there's nothing that can stop it. So now it's going to conference. I suspect it could be in conferences as soon as next week. I think they do conference twice a week. And so we could see on the docket Monday that it's scheduled for conference on one of the days of that week.
Or they hey, John, can you stop it a minute?
They could make it...
Okay, I want to explain something here that we didn't get to hear, but the what's happened is...
Let me meanwhile move forward to 32, I think.
Well, I want to get it. I want you to hear his assessment of what they're gonna, what this implication is, which is like let's see, we can try it now. Bring it up. I don't know. Move it up a quarter inch. Move it up. What are we? What minute are we on this? I can't
we're,
tell.
We're at 8:39.
So go to 12:50 or something like that. See if he's still. It's just before. What's his name? The guy with the boots down there starts talking.
The dedication has to be accomplished.
No, back it up.
Yeah, and that case is stalled right now. But the case that my brother has gone all the way through all of that. We feel like we've taken the ball over the goal line. So the United States Supreme Court literally has the power now, without any interference, to completely adjudicate this case.
That's unbelievable. Juan, you want to jump in there and take this a little further?
Okay, you want me to take this over to 32?
You're going to have to. You know, in here he talked about what they're going to do, and he said they're going to bring the marshals in, they're going to relieve everybody from power, the Congress, the Senate. I thought that was right here.
All right, let's take it from here.
Mitigate the whole complaint that this petition is connected to.
Yeah,
there's
you're right.
Civil conspiracy. Now, when I know this, that when you are charged with conspiracy, you go to your lawyer, and you want your conspiracy buddies to be represented by that lawyer, that would be malpractice. So they would have to all find legal representation in law firms that they would have to do some background checks and find that they had no connections with any of the other 387 defendants. So that would cause them a lot of problems. But as far as speculating what could actually happen, wow, we just know we got the ball over the goal line, and now it's up to them. We believe, we feel like we know miracles have happened to get us to this point, so we believe that there are other people in place, like you, gentlemen, getting it to the public, and those, the Supreme Court justices, and all the states that would have to, you know, replace representatives. But another thing that this does is this opens up the Achilles heel. Our representatives have been able to act with immunity, and they haven't been held accountable. Article 6 of the Constitution, and this is part of the pleading, requires a binding oath that they be bound by oath, and they've given themselves immunity. As a matter of fact, in California, they have perjury laws that actually have the words that exclude politicians and their oath of office. So they've been active over quite a few years, giving themselves immunity and violating Article 6 of the Constitution and subverting it by the Article 6 that requires a binding oath. So once this happens, it's like this goes right down to the local level. Some states, I know here in Utah, they have immunity protection that violates the state constitution as well. So this would be the legal authority, Supreme Court decision would be the legal authority to strip immunity from our representatives from the top down to the bottom. And that might cause certain individuals not to want to run for office if they're going to be accountable, and it would be sort of a direction back to a representative form of government. If it was truly a representative form of government, you're representing the vote from the people or from the state legislators, and therefore you don't have liability. But when they're acting as dictators for 2 years or 6 years or 4 years or whatever, without being accountable, that's a big shift to being going back to the Constitution and stripping them of their unconstitutional immunity, and that's a big part of the case.
I'm going to have a question for Bruce and Juan right here. Juan,
I think this might be coming. Well,
military operation at the highest level.
I think we missed it.
Yeah, maybe.
We missed the part where he said they're going to send them the marshals out, and they all come down. They go out of office.
Right. Hey, basically, you know, the enforcement did, because I don't know where it's at on this. We should have prepared this earlier.
Well, I thought I had it, but being that I can't share, I'm not having a good time here.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy of this is the reason the court took the case, the justices, regardless of what you think of them, I think that, you know, they're making the right rulings either because, you know, they've gotten back to, you know, what they're supposed to be, or more likely it's the art of the deal. They got their arms twisted up around their backs and they said, look, we got you guys on treason. You either make the right ruling or we're going to take you out now. So they proceeded to do down with Roe versus Wade. Well, that's really ticked off the Congress and the Senate, and they got a loaded gun pointed at the judiciary. They're a lame duck Congress and Senate right now. So if they come back into session, if they're still there after December, they're going to put limits on the Supreme Court like you've never seen. They're going to put in multiple justices, 20, 30 justices. They're going to put term limits in, and they're going to even try to limit their power, which is, it's all unconstitutional, but they will try to get away with it if they can, because there's supposed to be three equal branches of government. When they get done, they will have gutted the judiciary. So the justices took this case because when this case goes through, there's nothing to argue because they are standing on their immunity. And what's going to happen is that immunity is unconstitutional and it's going to fall. And basically what it says is when Donald Trump was in, he made an executive order that said that within 45 days of the election, that the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, was supposed to give a report, and he was supposed to collect the reports from the other, I don't know what it is, 12, 15 agency that he's head of, Homeland Security, this one, that one, and they're supposed to say that there was no interference in the election that would have allowed a Manchurian candidate, so to speak, or a domestic or foreign enemy to take control of the government. Well, they had 45 days. On the 45th day, or the day before, the 44th day, he gives his report and he says, well, we don't have enough time. He said there was definitely interference, but I can't tell you if it changed the outcome of the election. Because he took the, you know, just like the Supreme Court, when they go, well, you have no standing. That was kind of a no standing answer. But the fact of the matter is that if he brought back a report that said that there was interference, which he did, they were bound by law to pause the elections for 10 days and look into those charges. There were 100 congressmen that made reports and brought evidence of tampering in the election, and they did nothing. They did no investigation. So there was two crimes committed. The fact that they didn't do the investigation, and then there were the crimes committed by them who shot down who they voted to not do the investigation. That was a separate crime. So then they voted to certify the election. So each one of those, some of those crimes are treason, and some of those crimes are sedition. But it doesn't matter. They all out of office, and that's all 380 of them, plus the president and the vice president. They can remove them from office immediately, and they will not sit as a lame duck Congress. The Supreme Court took this case as a loaded gun and pointed it back at Biden and the Congress and the Senate to fight for their life. Basically, it's over. Because what you're going to see is they're going to pull them out of office. That's going to happen. If it's going to happen, it has to happen in December. There's no more time. They cannot let these guys come back and try to do their lame duck.
January, it's over for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is massive, massive stuff. So Roe versus Wade was the first one. This Brunson case is the next one. It's the next thing that pushes the ball over the edge where they're actually going to have them pull them out of office, tell them you don't have a job, And then they're gonna start prosecuting them because they're guilty of treason and sedition. All of them, every one of them, except the ones that did not vote to certify the election. You're gonna have about 100 congressmen and senators left to run this country, and they're mostly conservative, you know what I mean, guys, because they didn't put up with it from the beginning. This is beyond anything that you could ever imagine, and I'm sorry that we didn't get the spot on here because it was very, very, to me, it was earth-shattering when he explains how, you know, this is going to take place. But you can go and find this on Video Sanctuary and play it yourself and listen to it.
And then we also have it on our website right here underneath, you know, today's issues come down to Q News. And we have it on this page because I posted this on this page. It is that powerful. Actually, this is a different one. I didn't post that one, but there's some ones here. I guess you're going to have to go over there to get it or to Rumble. But we do have a couple of new ones that came up this week. We have this sit-down with these individuals. This was pretty powerful. SGNON sat down and gave a lot of great information. I just posted this evening. And the other one I posted earlier today the Anon's audio file number 29. So it's another two reports up there that came up.
I think, isn't that the one that he tells them that it might be. Military is talking to the Supreme Court?
It might be here at 30. Let's see. I'll go real quick just to take a quick look.
We're excited to get the live elections. We know that we're going to have to arrive at a snap election point here.
Without those members being elected, that would give us enough time to stop the COVID. Without those members.
To return lawful governance to the people through the infrastructure systems that we currently have in place. In other words, we're operating inside the confines of what the U.S. Constitution of the Republic of the United States allows us here on this end, and it's my understanding that we're operating within the constitutions, the lawful government constitutions of all free people nations everywhere. It takes a long time to tailor an operation to fit that sort of mold. I'm not sure about the specifics, but I think that's a very, very good possibility that we move into a situation where the Australian military, along with the United States military, provides evidence for a governor general to dissolve the federal parliament and hold snap elections.
It's not in that area, but that's some pretty powerful stuff. If people haven't listened to this particular last interview, look at this whole page is powerful. But let me just quickly just articulate one of the most key points that I think is the most key point, and we're including this in the paperwork for our enforcement, and that was that the United States Northern Command approached the United States Supreme Court concerning this case and said, we are watching you on this case. That signaled to me that we could do the same thing, and we're copying them for enforcement. I think people will agree with me next week after we read this. I think people are going to agree with me. This is the most powerful paper going in before the United States Supreme Court ever. I mean, we're going to hit so many points, so many problems, and require so many actions from the United States Supreme Court. And we're going to be talking about this very important decision that we need to be making next week after we go through this. We're coming together as the grand jury. But we're also coming in as a writ mandamus. But we're starting off as the grand jury, and then we're coming in as the petit jury with a decision already with a writ mandamus. We've been in a court for 5 years, and we've been met with 5 years of silence. 5 years, these people have received our paper and snubbed their nose at us and refused to answer. Refused to recognize us as the people, and even refused all of our paperwork and has hidden our paperwork. Even though the paperwork is there, out of fear they have not taken it out, I don't believe. The clerk did put it in, but they did hide it from the standpoint, if you call up about this case is not available to the people. So anyway, this is where our enforcement's going to come in from. But we have to make big decisions next week, and everyone should be involved in this to work to make this decision, because we have to do it justly, we have to do it righteously. And so anyway, that's my plug for that. I don't know what you want to do, Gerard. If you want to take on some questions, you do have two people out there.
Yeah, we got, what do we got? Maybe 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, about 15.
Let me try this and see if it's going to work even. I don't even know. Let's see. Let's try next question.
It worked.
Okay. So John Johnson, rather. Patricia, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good evening.
Hey.
I'm Patricia calling from New York City. And my question is not pertaining to any topics that were spoken this evening. So I'm wondering, should I go ahead? I've been waiting for months to ask this question because I put an intake form in. So I'm just going to go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, great. Okay, let me see. Okay, I had a house. I sold my house to a buyer, and the real estate bought the house for me and sold it to the buyer. Then the deed came to the house in the real estate's name. Currently, the buyer has been going back and forth to court to get the house put in his name. But no one paid me for that house. They took the house from me, and I wound up in a shelter behind that action. I have no closure to this issue. My question is, what action can I take to get some form of restitution out of this? And were there any violations done to me?
Did the government take it, or did the real estate agent take it?
The real estate agent took it.
That's fraud.
This is a scam.
Yeah, that's fraud. It's very dangerous what they did. You could take this into court. You have two options. You can throw a lot of money away, go get yourself a lawyer and throw a lot of money away. You're going to lose a third of what you're going to win by doing that. Or you can learn how to do it yourself. Now, remember, you don't have to do it right away. You can take time out and maybe do it in January or something. Take time out from now until then to educate yourself. I wrote a book called Court Access in the Common Law. It's very affordable right here, right on the website. I'm still sharing, yeah. Take a look at this book. There's a lot of information about the book. It's $39.95, and it'll teach you how to go into the courts. Now, once you go through this book and read it as a book, if you were here earlier, I mentioned this, just read it as a book and then start using it, start preparing, you know, using it to write your papers. Then you can come back here and you can ask us questions and we can talk intelligently now because you'll understand things. And we can continue to give you more information, more advice, and you can handle your own case and you don't have to give a third of your home to some lawyer.
You know,
yes, that's right. And I ordered the book as well.
But what was that? We were working with a guy who did the forensic audit on these cases, exactly what you're talking about. I don't remember his name. I don't know if you remember, John, the guy that was doing the forensic audit that backed the thing up and showed, you know, where they did the robo signing, where the real estate stole the house. Because that helps. You need a forensic audit to lay out the crime.
Well, if you can figure out, because I don't remember, but
there was a guy that was doing them. Maybe Jim knows because he was into
If you get that information, we'll share it with her.
Yeah,
I'd like
it's kind of important that if you can get that done, it's going to make your life a lot easier because he'll go back through and he'll show what they did by the documentation. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this is extremely important. If people don't know how to represent themselves in court, and it is extremely important, and I'm pushing for this, we're creating books for education for our children. It's up to the people to get these books into the school. It's up to the people to take control of the schools within their counties. Okay, and that's what we need to do. All our children, when they come out of school, they should understand the court system. They should know how the court system works. They should be able to write their own papers. They should be able to run their own case. Okay, this is important because our heritage is in the law. If you don't know the real law, we're not talking about the law that'll put you to sleep. You can't even understand and what they're even talking about, and they hide things down rabbit holes. We're not talking about that. We're talking about justice, that which is right and wrong, which brings us to maxims, which brings us to that which is right and wrong, and that is most logical. It's called common sense. But the thing is, you have to know how to couch your common sense in procedure. And that's what you need to learn. That's what my book is all about, by the way, to give you a whole new mindset but give you the procedure to be able to couch your case and lay out all of the different things and the mechanisms that you can use in the court. This book lays all of that out. It gives you lots of different processes. It gives you all the forms, everything you need to know for this. So those of us who have gone to school, we have no knowledge of the courts. We don't know how things work. Well, you should prepare, because someday you're going to have to deal with a court. Someday you're going to have to deal with a problem. And if you want to give a third of your money away to some lawyer, or they want to hire, you got to hire them and stick money out of your pocket beforehand if they won't take your case as a partnership by taking a third, if that's what you want to do, fine. But I'll tell you what, no one knows your case better than you. Now, lawyers will tell you what doctors will tell you. You can't be your own doctor. You can't be your own lawyer. Well, that's a lie straight from hell. The best person in the world is the person who understands the case. Unless you're guilty, then you want to get a lawyer to represent you if you're guilty, okay? But, you know, but as far, and to some degree, the same thing with doctors. You know, I can't get through to my doctor, and I tried talking to him, but he's working with me anyway. He thinks I'm crazy because I don't go to get their pharmaceuticals. I take vitamins and supplements. I find out my deficiencies, and I fast, and I do the necessary things. I exercise, all the necessary things to keep me healthy, and I'm healthy, okay? I was in bad shape a couple of years ago, real bad shape. And I think I was on the way out, to be honest. But in any event, that's gone. It's done. Why? Because I took control of my own life. Why? I didn't take their pharmaceuticals. Why? I went out and exercised. I dieted. I did the right things. And I put the things in that were my deficiency was. And I bounced back. Okay? So it's the same thing. The doctors and the lawyers especially. Because I'll tell you, a lawyer will never be able to represent your case. And I've been involved in lots and lots of cases when I was in construction, you know, going through arbitration and even in the courts working with lawyers. But basically, I was the guy that came to lay out the knowledge and the understanding of the construction process, what took place, what was done, and who's liable for it. And I was able to make those cases in arbitration or through lawyers in a court of law. And so if you don't know the ability to work through courts, you're going to lose things, and you're going to give it up to some attorney or some lawyer. Hopefully there'll be no bar attorneys, because we're looking to get rid of them. They're guilty. The Bar Association is guilty of high treason, and we know what the penalty of high treason is. Treason could be, you know, up to 20 years in jail. High treason is a whole different thing. It bypasses the jail time altogether. And so the Bar Association is guilty of high treason, and all these lawyers are the minions of the New World Order, pushing forward the New World Order agenda and controlling the whole process. They control our political process. They control our judicial process. They control our education. They control our medical system. They control everything. It's time for the people to take it back. You need to learn. Yeah. Two books, Court Access in the Common Law, and also Government by Consent. And again, that's another book you'll find on the right-hand side of the website. You click on that one, it'll give you all the information, and you can click the buttons to buy it right off Amazon. All right, I'm done plugging those anyway. I got to get going, Gerard. Let me leave you back to the last few. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, next question, Felicia from Florida.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Very good.
This is Felicia in Florida.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm trying to hang in there. Non-judicial foreclosures. But I want to say one thing. Babylon is falling, so it's happening.
Yes, it is. That's right.
Say and, that, Babylon and there, is falling.
And there should
the
be
modern day Babylon is falling.
Yep.
But the non-judicial foreclosures, it's been 5 years for me, and it's like nothing is happening. So what do I need to do to push this forward?
Well, I think everything's going to accelerate now that this case is going through court, because they're going to go through with all this unconstitutional stuff, and they're going to knock it down. It's going to be very easy for you to put your claim in. I mean, you already kind of fought them. You know, you may want to resubmit it at the right time, because, you know, they were hiding everything and nobody was listening before.
With us. She already has a case. We're going to the Supreme Court soon. We'll be meeting on that next week, and you need to be there if you got a case in. We're looking for restitution for you at that point. Now, I don't know exactly when we're going to file it. We're gonna go through the paperwork that was written up. We're going to go through that next week. We're going to make some decisions as a group of people, as jurists. Then that is going to go. We're still working on statistical information that we have to put together. That could take another couple of weeks. I'd like to say we'll be filing by January. I'd like to file before Christmas if possible. If possible, we could do that. I don't know that for sure because I'm not controlling the work that needs to be done on this from that level. But as far as the court case being written, that'll be done by the end of this week, and we'll be portraying it next Monday. We're going to spend the entire 2 hours, we may even go 3 hours next week, in order to go through this case, to make some decisions, to talk about it, and go forward. And anybody that has a case in here should be at this meeting. And we have hundreds of people, and they haven't been showing up for the Monday night meetings. But it's time for them to show up. You know, we'll work hard to get what they need to get. We're trying to get the restitution, and they should come. You know, there is a principle. It's a righteous and justice principle. It's a biblical principle. Freely you have been given, so freely you must be given back. And people need to exercise that maxim or that just statement or whatever you want to call it. Okay, they've been given a lot of help here, and they're not educating themselves. They need to educate themselves. We all need to educate ourselves, and we all need. Not one person in this room should not be involved. Should not be in a case where they're not connected or working with their committees of safety, creating a committee of safety. Everyone should be doing that. That's your duty. You don't have a choice. And if you're concerned about your family and your friends, your posterity, if you're concerned about them, you got to get involved. If you're not concerned about it, forget about them. Then you don't have to get involved. But we need to get involved. All right, with that, I'm done.
Okay.
Get the rest.
Okay, that's it?
Yep. Make sure you come to the meeting where we're going to vote on the grand jury to put this case in. Read the paper. Your case is in there, so we're pushing for enforcement on all of them. So I think it's very important that you're in there, and I know that you are, because the people that are in there are going to get the restitution first. There's so much restitution that has to be given. I don't even know how they're going to do it, to be honest with you. So it's very important that your case is in our case, because I think, like I said, I think those people will get it first.
Hey, Gerard, before I leave, one more thing. You know, you're going to the Patriot soapbox this weekend. You should push real hard, spend some time to get these people to this Monday night meeting next week and how important it is and the paper that's going to go before the Supreme Court. I'll get you a preliminary copy of the paper so you can talk intelligently, but I don't want you to give too much out. You know, we really want to go through it step by step, because some people will think, well, I got enough information, I don't have to go there and listen.
Right.
Well, this whole paper is extremely important. But I'll give you some cliff notes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have one more question. I've dated a lot of intake forms and submitted a lot of documents to the sheriffs and the judges and everything. I need to know, is that case has been dismissed?
Oh, it doesn't matter what they've done with the case. It was all unlawful. They defrauded you. It doesn't matter. No, we're bringing this before the United States Supreme Court with enforcement. That's what we're talking about. And your case is, I believe your case is connected with us. You've already submitted it to us, and we've submitted it as evidence, didn't we?
Last year.
Okay, well, it's in there.
It's in there, yeah.
Yeah, well, it started in 2017, but now it's 2022. So I'm just wondering where the room is.
Like you said, Babylon is falling, and this is it. This is exciting.
Yes, it is.
Because you, there's light at the end of your tunnel, I can tell you that right now. So it's going to be exciting. I can hardly wait.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I guess not.
Oh, you know. Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
just keep praying. I think we're there. I think God has heard our prayer. You know, I just wanted to say, you know, the first thing that happened this year was Roe versus Wade went down. Nobody expected that.
No, because I watched the first debate between Biden and Trump, and when Biden mentioned it, and Trump said, "That's what are you talking about?" He had no idea. So they already knew ahead of time what they was going to do.
Oh, I'm sure that they did at that level. But what
I watched that first debate this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, Trump always came in and said he was for the kids, for the children. And he was talking even about the unborn children. So
when Biden mentioned it, Trump had no idea that it was coming, and it came this year.
So. Well, what happened was, I believe, is that they told these justices, you rule constitutionally, or they got a couple of them, I think they have evidence on where they were actually committing, you know, crimes against humanity and treason. And they told them, we could take you out now, or you can rule constitutionally. And that's why the court ruled against Roe versus Wade. They all became targets when they did that. You understand that. This is the devil, and that is the blood sacrifice to Moloch, all those abortions. And they hate the fact that they stopped it, basically. Well, they didn't stop it, but they put it down on the state level. Now God can judge the people in the states, and they can pay the price of that. But when it was at the federal level, we could have no blessings of liberty in this country because that curse was on our national government. So until they got rid of Roe versus Wade, there was no winning any battles anywhere in the United States. When that went down, That was like the signal that is it Isaiah? He says, if my people who call themselves by my name would repent and pray, I would hear their prayers and heal their land. That's what he was talking about. You know, when the leader of a country talks, God holds his words way more to the fire than you or me. So when Roe versus Wade went down, we lost that curse that they put on us, that blood sacrifice curse. So, and nobody expected it, but it's because of what they did with between Trump and the military to pressure the court to do the right thing, and they voted it down. So now they've had threats, and they got people after them, and the Congress is coming after the court, and there's all this crap going on, which actually is going to be a good thing, because now the court is going to fire back, and they got every one of those congressmen and senators for treason, for certifying the vote, knowing that there was a foreign interference in there. They're all done. This could never happen otherwise. So those two cases are the two cases that have started the avalanche, the dominoes to fall. They're done, and there's no defense, because they can't even come back, because they've already acquiesced and they're standing on their immunity, which is unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional. Yes.
What's that?
Indeed. It's unconstitutional indeed amongst the people. It really is. But certain people in our government have been given immunity.
You cannot give immunity for anything like that, like treason or crimes against humanity. It's impossible. You know, you can't give it. And when you have an oath, you can't have an oath to an office or an oath that you operate under, and then also say you're immune, because it does, the two don't go together. So it's that kind of immunity is unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional, yes, it is. But you might want to watch the press conference by the old Prime Minister of Canada. He was the Secretary of Defense.
Uh huh.
That where he talks about how they were given immunity. Mm hmm.
Well, whatever they did, they might have used the devil's words to twist things, but it's not going to hold up, because it's a complete contradiction of everything that the Bill of Rights and the Constitution are all about. You know, they speak with silver tongues, but they're going to pay now, and they're going to be hung by their tongues. So,
of course,
it's all over. They can't even argue about it. You know, they didn't even put a case in to rebut it. Like he said, they didn't even put other charges in. They didn't answer anything. So there's nothing to answer. So when the Supreme Court gets it, they can say, what's the law? The law says they were supposed to do, they were supposed to pause for 10 days and do an investigation. Okay. Did they do it? No. That's it. That's treason. They knew that there was foreign and domestic interference in the election, and they did not protect the American people, so they're all out of office, every one of them. And what that's going to do is it's going to have a domino effect right down into the counties, because when that top falls, and that's where your case is going to come in, because all that stuff's going to come down now. They have no more protection. Their protection used to be from on top. Well, the top has fallen. You know that statue in the Bible that had a gold helmet and silver breastplate, and then it got down to the feet, and it was clay and steel? That's what's happening. The clay is falling away from the steel. The feet are going to be out. That statue's going to fall, and you're going to see it fall this year. That's my belief anyway. You know. Anyway, with that, I'm going to say goodnight. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think we need, you know, lots of fasting and prayers, and then there's this Christmas season. Remember, Trump said you're going to have a very merry Christmas. I'm holding to it. Okay. Have a good night. We love yous all, and God bless America.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.